Good morning, everyone.
There's no tan in the legislature.
Good morning, everyone, because we have a really full agenda. Meeting is coming to order. I'm going to get started here. I'm Senator Mary Olson. Representative Simon and I are the co-chairs of the Data Practices Conference Committee, and we have a full agenda here today, so we're going to get started right away. The first thing I'll do is give all the members a chance to introduce themselves briefly. Representative Simon and I have met and walked through the side-by-side comparison of the bill between the House and Senate. We have identified some things we think are strictly, some differences between the bills that we think are strictly technical differences that have to do with language, just different choices of words. And I'm going to point those out quickly so that if anyone thinks we need to spend time on them, we will. But if no one has any concern with our consensus that these really are just technical things that we can probably agree to adopt, then we'll move on to the areas where we think we have some substantive differences that will need discussion. The Senate has caucus today at 9 o'clock.
The Senate DFL.
And I'm not sure what the Senate Republicans are doing, but they may too.
I could just stay here and argue with these folks.
Well, we are probably going to go a little into that caucus time, and we'll probably recess at about 9:15. Hopefully by that time we'll have a little idea where we're going today, but we do need to complete our work today, which means that we'll probably just be recessing, and as both House and Senate members are available, getting back together throughout today, the day until we complete our work. So with that being said, I'd like to move to Senator Moi, first to Kathy Twanius, our counsel, and give her a chance to introduce herself, and then we'll move around the table.
Me, Moi, I represent Senate District 67, which is one-fourth of the city of St. Paul.
I'm Don Betzel, State Senator from Fridley, Mounds, Hugh Springer, Clark, and Blaine. For House members, that means Tom Tilburn and Scott Kranz.
I'm Warren Limmer. I represent Northwest Hennepin County and 23 homes in Wright County.
Jim Metzen, South St. Paul.
I'm Matt Gehring from House Research.
I'm Mary Liz Holberg from Lakeville.
Lois Kahn from Minneapolis.
Melissa Hartman, I represent Brooklyn Park and Coon Rapids.
Deborah Hillstrom, I represent Brooklyn Center and parts of Brooklyn Park.
Steve Simon, St. Louis Park and Hawkins.
And those of you who are here in the audience today, we would, if you could let us know, if you could pass a note up or otherwise let us know if we're dealing with a portion of the bill that you'd like to testify about so that we can make sure that we don't overlook you, if there's something you'd like us to consider. So, with that being said, if we can turn to the side, does everyone have a copy of the side-by-side of the bill? And then also, Kathy Pontius has prepared for us a bill summary, which highlights the differences between the two bills and that we believe are, I think, mainly this has to do with the substantive differences. So I'm going to, in referring to the side-by-side, I'm going to talk about the differences first that Representative Simon and I did not think were particularly substantive, and see if there's anyone there who has something that they think we should consider. On R6, R6, the language difference there, or the difference there, had to do with there was a difference that had to do with heritable or congenital disorders.
Madam Chair.
Representative Simon.
Are you referring to the House Section 14?
Well, that particular section, I think, is something we're going to want to be discussing, so I don't think that's what I was referring to. I thought there was something else on that page that, on the very top... Oh, yes, this is what, on the very top, there was a difference in the date. The date was on the House side was January 1st, 2007. And that was a change that I think was highlighted, or the difference was highlighted because Senator Limmer had a concern. Do you recall, Senator Limmer, that this was something you wanted to have a chance to comment about in the conference committee?
Madam Chair, I don't remember what my concern was, but I believe
Senator
that
Betzel,
I didn't know what the U.S. Code was in making reference to the U.S. Code.
Madam Chair, as I recall the discussion, we didn't want to lock ourselves into a specific date on the U.S. Code. If the code changes, we wanted to be consistent with whatever the U.S. Code was. And if they change on January 1st, 07, and they change a later date, we said we want to be consistent with what that is. So we did not say a particular date there, so... That's how I recall it.
Representative Holbrook?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And the House rationale for putting this language in was that we were comfortable with the federal standards as they stood January 1, 2007, but that if we just referenced the codes and the feds changed to something that was more permissive than what we were comfortable with, then we would by default take that standard. And so that was the rationale in the House that we wanted a known entity and what was in federal law on a particular date and not be at the whims of what the feds do relative to this section of standards.
Senator Limmer?
Madam Chair, I remember now I had the same concern. My concern was not reflected in the Senate language. I had a concern that without a date specific, the code could change over time. And we would just be floating along with whatever that code was. We understand what the code is as of this date. And that was my concern at that time.
Senator Limmer, would you then be comfortable with the House's resolution of that
yes,
matter?
I
and would you or Representative Holbrook like to move that?
Could I move the House language to this portion of the bill?
Senator Limmer moves that we accept the House language with respect to lines 7.17 and 7.18 on the of the House language on the side-by-side. All those in favor?
Madam Chair, can we just move Section 11?
Yeah.
The House.
Can we just have Senator Limmer move Section 11 of the House language?
Well, Madam Chair, technically it's a Senate bill, so we'd have to make the motion to move Section 11 of the House language as part of Senate File 596. Yeah.
Thank you, Senator Betzel. Yeah. Representative Kahn?
Madam Chairman, have you had a motion to accept all the parts of the bill that are identical in both?
Representative Kahn, Senator Moan just pointed out to me that would be a good place to start. As soon as we finish this, we'll do that. So back to Senator Limmer's motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Accept the House language for... Senate file, Section 11 of the Senate file, say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes.
There's a pause.
So then we will move to... I didn't think anyone... I thought everyone...
Well, Madam Chair, you still have to ask.
Okay. Was anyone opposed to the motion?
It's her first year.
I don't think.
Motion passes.
We get on the conference committee again.
Yeah.
It was all wrong once.
Nice.
I think at this point, Representative Simon, did you have a motion you wanted to make?
Yes, Madam Chair. I wanted to move that we adopt or agree on, I don't know how to properly formulate it, all the similar language, all the same language, the identical language. Let me rephrase that. All the identical language that we agree become part of the Senate file.
Thank you, Representative Simon. And Ms. Pontius, do you want to just give a brief overview of what that language is? Representative Kahn?
Madam Chairman, I think we're going to come back just in the interest of time to go through that category since there's so much. I think we could just accept it and then we know we're going to be back again if there's any mistake that we've made that could be identified. I don't think we all have copies of the side by side.
Representative Holberg.
And, Madam Chair, I guess, I don't know if the time is now or at some point, I think it would be appropriate to ask if there's anybody in the audience that has any objection or concerns to the identical language. I mean, sometime from the time we pass the bills off the House, things are discovered that we might not be aware of, so I would at least like that opportunity to feedback on the identical language.
I'm assuming that everyone in the audience has had an opportunity to receive a copy of the side-by-side. And with before we adopt the identical language in the side-by-side, is there anyone in the audience that would like an opportunity to speak to any concerns they may have? Seeing none, Representative Simon has moved that this committee adopt the identical language in the two bills, and all those in favor of that motion, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
And then, Madam Chair, I'm assuming we're going to get a list of what is identical so that we can just kind of go through and mark out the things that, you know, copies here so we don't have to, so we know what's been adopted here. So.
Chair.
Madam Chair.
Yes, I found helpful the House research bill summary that Mr. Gehring put together that I think denotes what is identical language, using that language, identical language. And it, I think, effectively points out what those are, where literally to the comma,
right,
it's absolutely identical.
Senator Betzel, okay. The House summary does list. Okay. I mean, I can go through and state the sections, but
That's fine. I think I can kind of go through it and figure it out.
Well, Madam Chair,
just for the record, because in the future when they want to hone in on our conversation here, can we just take 2 minutes and just go through the side-by-side and you just read out the sections that are identical, and then we have it done, and everybody is on the same page.
And for the audience, too, then they'll know that we've eliminated those sections in terms of consideration. Ms. Pontius, would I be correct in assuming if I use this as a reference that the House section numbers are identical to the...
No.
Or are they going to be different than the...
No.
They're different.
Okay. Okay, the identical provisions then are going to be
Madam Chair.
I'll just point out, since the language is identical, if you want, you could just use the House section numbers to refer to the sections that, of language that you're adopting, because it's the same on both the House and Senate side. So... Yeah, that's easier.
Okay. Then the section numbers are section 1 and 2, sections 4 through 7, sections 12 and 13, sections 15 and 16, sections 18 and 19, sections 21 through 26, sections 28 and 29, 31 through 39, and actually through 40, sections 41 and 42, section 44, 46 through 48, section 50, and I believe the remainder of the bill has
59.
Oh, you're right. And sections 59 through 61. So if we turn to the first section then where we have a discrepancy or a difference, that would be section 3, which has to do with judicial branch data. And this was, the members of the Senate recall, this was the provision that had to do with traveling data and whether it was going to retain the same data classification when we received, when money from the courts was sent to other departments. And this was a section that we considered in the Senate but was laid over for next year because of our determination. I think we thought it needed more work. So would any of the members like to address this provision? Representative Simon?
Right. Madam Chair, thanks. My understanding of this provision is that it was simply meant to prevent the situation where a simple transfer of data, I'm not sure where the money piece came in. I thought I heard you to say something about money or payment, but when data leaves a court or leaves the judicial branch for various reasons, and there are many reasons why that might be the case, that it not lose whatever protection it might have, particularly in the case of private data on individuals. If for some reason that were to leave the judicial branch and go elsewhere for whatever reason, that it would maintain the same characteristic. That's really it. And obviously I can't speak to what was considered on the Senate side, but on the House side, this just seemed to be a codification of what many people assume to be the case already.
Senator Moore.
Madam Chair and members, I seem to recall that when we were considering this, the members of the Data Practice Subcommittee had some questions about potential unintended consequences. And I think the Newspaper Association was there, and they raised some concerns. And we just didn't have people present to testify to what the some of the consequences will be and to respond to some of the concerns that were raised by the Newspaper Association. And that's why we laid it over for more public input.
And Senator Moore, I believe I remember the same thing. And I think another one of the concerns we have was that the classifications didn't exactly line up from the courts coming over to other kinds of classifications, if I recall correctly, and that this was something that we were going to need to spend more time on in terms of determining exactly what kinds of information we'd be talking about and how those classifications would match up. Is there anyone in the audience that wants to speak to this issue?
I spoke in the subcommittee first.
Could you come to the table, please?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. Mark Anfinson, attorney for the Minnesota Newspaper Association. I did speak in the Senate Data Practices Subcommittee about this, and I think the chair has accurately summarized the concern, as Senator Moi. There's no urgency to do this. That's the first proposition, I think, that's got to be put before you. And if you weigh that against what could be very massive unintended consequences of going forward with this, you really should wait. There was very little testimony about this in either body. The problem is the judiciary does not use the same classification system as the Data Practices Act does. And so when you have all of these myriad judicial classifications, not just imposed by the rules of public access to the judiciary, but also by individual judges, for example, sealing individual files, in many, many different context, you're going to create a situation, especially for the executive branch, that could impose a lot of liability on them. They're not going to be able to track this stuff very well, and they're not going to be able to convert the classifications very confidently. So if you think about that and then ask, what's the rush? There isn't any. But our proposal is, let's look at this a little more carefully, get it right, and then it's probably a good idea.
The members have any questions, Senate Representative Simon?
Thank you, Mr. Anfinson. Thanks for your testimony. I guess, two things. First, can you give us an example, a hypothetical, of an unintended consequence? What could go wrong? How, either from the standpoint of your clients or otherwise, what would be the problem? Can you give us a for instance?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, from the perspective of my client, and if I may state it more broadly from the public, you're going to have all this data coming in from the judiciary potentially, and we don't even know how much travels from the judiciary to the executive branch agencies, where the executive branch employees are going to be very cautious and concerned about this. So they may not even release things that should be. But I'll give you one specific example. Let's say a judge in Dakota County seals a portion of a criminal file, just that file. And then portions of that criminal file are collected by executive branch agencies, which they are regularly. And that is inadvertently disclosed by a law enforcement agency in the executive branch. Now all the penalties, which are significant in the Data Practices Act, trigger against that agency. You know, maybe this is a good idea. I think generally the concept is. We just haven't sorted out how these two very separate systems, the judicial records and the executive branch records, interact as well.
Senator Limmer, and then we'll go with
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Mr. Anfinson, not all the court's business is dealing with criminal records. Let's say if there was a dispute between a merchant and a customer, or a divorce, or accounts and account numbers were being discussed, would there be an interest in a newspaper interest to know the account numbers of a dispute that's being discussed in court? That certainly, I believe, should be protected as much as possible, and I don't think that is necessarily the need for. I'm trying to question why a news reporter would need an account number of an account involved in, let's say, a divorce.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, I have done this for a long time and have learned that I will never be able to adequately anticipate what newspapers may think they need or want, right or wrong. But there certainly are isolated examples where the privacy is a good idea. As I say, I don't generally oppose the notion here. The problem is that we don't know how broad the consequences are, either in terms of a loss of public access or in terms of executive branch liability. And your case does highlight one important facet of this discussion, which is that I think the great majority of the information that we routinely believe should be private, such as certain account numbers and things like that, are currently classified as private both in judicial records and in executive branch records. So nothing will change. Where this will have the impact that's hard to apprehend is where you have a lot of judicial branch records that are publicly accessible because they're in things like court files where you have a constitutional presumption of public access. And now they come in the executive branch where, for example, an individual judge has classified them differently. And nobody, how are you going to track that? Nobody can. Your example, I don't think, will be a problem.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions. I heard you talk about the example of a sealed court record. Mm-hmm. And that term doesn't necessarily match up with something in the Data Practices Act. That may be so. But let's take, just expanding on what Senator Limmer said, let's take a commercial context on a much larger scale. Let's say 3M or Medtronic or someone else is involved in a lawsuit, and that the court seals the record because there are sensitive intellectual property matters that are discussed in the context of the lawsuit.
That happens a lot.
Right. Can you explain to me why, under current law, it would be a bad idea to say that if for some reason a state agency requested copies of the court file that are under seal for that reason, that your clients or anyone else can't then do an end run around a sealed court record and say, the department of such and such wanted to see this record, asked for it, had transferred to it this sealed court file. why is it a good idea for the newspapers or anyone else, I'm not picking on your client, to be able to then to say, aha, it's now out of the court of the, it's now out of the hands of the judiciary, it's in the hands of the Department of whatever, and we can then, under the Data Practices Act, get a copy of that, see all the 3M or Medtronic patents or whatever it is. Why is that a good idea, and why wouldn't we act today to make sure that that can't happen?
Mr. Atkinson?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Simon, that is probably a good idea to keep that sort of stuff protected. And in fact, again, as with Senator Limmer's example, the Data Practices Act currently does classify trade secret data as private or confidential or not public. So that kind of thing does have a correspondence, as do many categories of data going back and forth. My concern, though, is that we can all come up with specific isolated examples of data that should be classified or not. This provision will cover every single data element that would ever travel from the judicial branch anywhere in the state at any level of the court system into any executive branch agency, state, regional, or local. We can't possibly, I don't think, speculate usefully in a few minutes about the consequences of that. Nobody's really looked at it carefully. There's been no testimony about it. And again, there's no urgency that I've ever been aware of. So my proposal is, let's wait till next year and sort this out.
Mr. Anfinson, so to summarize your testimony, am I understanding correctly that much of this information that travels from the judiciary would already have the data practices classification that would protect the data just because of its nature, because it contains something like trade secrets, but that we might want to look at this in more detail in terms of information that might not be adequately protected, but that it could have consequences beyond doing handling this so generally?
I think that is accurate, Madam Chair.
Is there anyone else in the audience from the department that wants to testify?
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm Lori Markensky with the Department of Administration. And this is one of those issues that has been, I think Mark is right in that it's not urgent because it's been just kind of under the surface for a really long time, and it's something that needs to be addressed. I have one more example to provide. Right now, personnel data for public employees is protected under the Data Practices Act. You could have judicial branch records about their employees coming over to an executive branch agency, and they would be public under the presumption. So what we're trying to do is just respect both branches of government so that the protections that the court places on their data travel when it comes to the executive branch. That's really all it's meant to do.
So, Ms. Barpetsky, are you saying that the department is asking or supports the language that's in the House side?
Madam Chair and members, yes, both the judicial branch and IPAD both are supportive of this language, and it was also a part of the CRIMNET delivery team discussions from several years ago as one of the issues to be addressed in criminal integration of how do we get all the parties to be able to have access to data when we've got the court rules of access and the Data Practices Act, and how do you merge them together?
Any questions from the members?
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
With that testimony, I would move that Section 3 be included in the Senate file.
Any discussion on that motion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion passes. The next section where we have some need for discussion is Section 8. This has to do with damages. There's House language that would significantly increase the violation for violations of the Data Practices Act. And I believe that This was something that came as a committee amendment on the House side and has not been considered in the Senate side. I don't think there was a separate bill that related to this issue. And so this is not something that we've heard in on the Senate side. And I guess from my perspective, this is something that would be a significant issue that we would probably have wanted to be able to discuss on the Senate side. I'm not certain how much time we're going to have today to get through all of this, to go into a great deal of discussion. What we may want to do when we identify these kinds of things, if there's something that the House feels very strongly about and isn't something that we can work out, is we may want to try to break these things down to a couple of members, one from each side, that can break out and talk about this before we come back and meet again. Otherwise, I think we're probably never going to get through things here today. Representative Holberg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to this point, this has been a perennial House position that every year or every 2 years we hear, oh, we'll work on it in the interim, and we have some ideas, and we have concerns too, and then nothing happens, and then we get to the amendment in the committee or floor at the end of the year, jack up the penalties, and we're back to the same spot. So some ideas for discussion with these people that you're saying are going to be assigned to this issue or whatever is maybe the jump in penalties is too high. Maybe we can ratchet that back a little bit. And then make an effective date in 08, July 1 of 08. And then we'll have all next session to actually, you know, look at doing something relative to this. But I'm afraid if we do nothing, once again, we're going to be sitting here a year from now with the same discussion.
Senator Moy?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Holberg, if it's a perennial issue, though, I mean, why isn't it a bill so that we can then do adequate discussion? Whose amendment is it anyways?
Representative Simon?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Moy. This was an amendment offered by Representative Chris De La Forest at the markup of the bill. I supported it. And I don't know, Madam Chair, whether now is the time to go into the rationale for it or not. I agree this is probably a discussion best held somewhat offline or not here, because it can probably be worked out separately or as part of a package or something like that. But
well, Representative Simon, maybe we can do that and try to move through a couple more issues before we have to adjourn.
Sure.
Here. But I would have to say that I know that in looking at this bill overall, one of the concerns that the Senate has if there is something significant, we would have wanted to have a chance to address it. There may be sometimes things that happen in the world contemporaneously that have to be addressed through an amendment just because we have to react quickly. And Representative Simon, you and I have talked about those kinds of things and how they might differ from other kinds of things. But if there's something that should be heard by both bodies, then we really, on the Senate, want to have that opportunity to have done that and not be, you know, giving it 5 minutes of consideration in a conference committee. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's a fair argument, but I really hope here, and I'd like to, on the record, distinguish between two separate circumstances. One is the one you just outlined, which is something that's in the House side, not in the Senate side, that came on through an amendment at the committee. That, I think, you have a sort of intellectually honest argument about that, just generically speaking, not as to this. Where I differ, though, with you is the idea that any, and I don't know whether you said this necessarily today, but my understanding is that the Senate may have some problems with other things that are in the House bill, not in the Senate bill, that were bills. And I hope we're not going to get in a situation where the House is made to negotiate against itself because there was a bill in the Senate and that the author in the Senate chose, for whatever reason, not to act. That's not a Senate position. Not acting on what was a bill is not a Senate position. So as we're going through this, I hope we can distinguish between what you just talked about and the circumstance where there is a House provision, not in the Senate. There was a Senate bill. The Senate author, for whatever reason he or she could explain, decided just not to move the bill. That's different. I think those are two entirely different circumstances. And the idea then that, well, the Senate wants to view it or look at it or take more testimony when there was an opportunity to do so, I don't think that's an instance where the House, as a rule, is just going to, you know, sort of give up its position for that reason. So I wanted on the record to get that distinction made.
Well, Representative Simon, I think your point is well taken. And we'll certainly give you plenty of opportunities to point out when you think that those kinds of circumstances are in play. And I'm sure the Senate will also make this body as a whole aware where we didn't have a chance to hear something. Representative Kahn, did you want to comment?
Yeah. Well, Madam Chairman, I also wanted to get to the other issue where suddenly something arises and there isn't time to put a bill in, and yet it's really incumbent on the legislature to respond to it. There is one issue here that I know fits into that category, which we're about to get to, and there are certain people in the audience right now, and maybe we could deal with that issue and get that off the table so we can, in a concrete set of time, and that's the issue on using the House summary, the issue on heritable and congenital disorders, which was brought up because of an ALG decision. And I know the people who are concerned about it are in the audience now.
Well, Representative Kahn, as long as you brought that up, and I do think we have quite a few people here who want to address that issue, as well as a couple of other issues. Having to do with Social Security numbers is another big issue. But let's go back to the one before we leave that had to do with damages. Representative Holberg, and would you want to be someone on the House side that would speak to that? And is there someone on the Senate side who would like to speak to that so we can maybe bring that issue back and get one working group formed here before we leave that?
Madam Chair, to speak to that, I don't know what your definition is. If you are saying work with the interested parties and a member of the Senate on some type of resolution, I'm happy to do that. I think I've already spoke to it as far as what my feelings are.
Well, is there anyone on the Senate side who would like to speak to Representative Holberg about that issue and come back with some type of...
I'll volunteer, Madam Chair. Okay. Now, today might be a busy day for me, and we'll have to do what we can. So.
Thank you, Senator Petzl. Senator Lemmer.
While we're here on this issue, historically, when was the last time these fees were increased? Do you know?
My understanding is it's been decades.
Well, at Representative Kahn's request, we are going to then turn to the issue of heritable and congenital.
What section?
Where are we at?
We're going to be skipping ahead to Section 14. And Section 17 also deals with this information.
R6.
I'd like to, at this time, call on counsel. Ms. Fanius is going to give us a brief overview of this issue for those of us on the Senate side who haven't heard this before, and the language that was adopted by the House.
Madam Chair, members, I believe the reference is actually to Section 17 of the House bill in terms of the urgency. It's on R7. And although this is part of a bigger House floor amendment, I think it's kind of a separate problem.
Madam Chair, if I might, we have an A6 amendment that that has to do with the newborn screening as well, too. So,
well, why don't we take and hear what's in the bill right now so we can have kind of a context for this, and then maybe we can hear the amendment. Ms. Pontius?
Oh, Madam Chair, members, I just learned of this issue a few days ago, but my understanding there's been a recent decision from an administrative law judge because of a potential conflict between the law that allows the Department of Health to do the genetic screening of newborns versus this general provision in the Data Practices Act, limiting the collection and use of genetic information. And this part of the House floor amendment, I believe, was just intended to clarify that this sort of generic section didn't override the ability of the department to participate in that program.
Are there any other members who would like to speak to this generally before we discuss the amendment? Representative Kahn?
Just to point out, the two sections that we're dealing with going to the House summary is Section 14 on R6 and Section 17 on R7.
Section 55.
And then?
Section 55. Section 55 House language is the substantive piece that goes with this. The other two sections are just cross-references.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Representative Holbrook.
In my mind, it's a package deal in that the ruling by the ALJ required a Tennyson warning that's not being given at this point to parents. And so, well, if you adopt just parts of this, then you negate the court ruling for the need for a Tennyson without putting in law a replacement to that. And so this becomes a kind of total package deal rather than a take one section or the other and leave part of it behind.
And Representative Holstrom, I know we've received a letter.
It's Holberg.
Oh, Holberg, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Representative Holberg. We've received a letter from the department and from the medical community or someone speaking on behalf of the medical community that did have some concerns with one such particular section. Does anyone have a copy of that letter?
Madam Chair, if we might, we've been working with the Department of Health, and I think they'd be happy to testify. They've seen the A6 amendment. We've had a series of conversations regarding this, and I know that they're prepared to testify today.
I'm sure we'll be taking their testimony, Representative Holberg. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My understanding is, I hope I'm not jumping the gun, but looking on the summary on R6 and R7, Section 14 and Section 17 of the House language, as far as I know, and I've been talking directly with many of the stakeholders, those provisions aren't what's controversial. And so I'm on the verge of moving that we adopt them. I know it's a package deal. I understand that. But what we're really talking about in terms of the language is Section 55. That's really the flashpoint here, not so much the first two sections. I understand it's all or none. And that,
so let's go.
I won't move it at this time, but I think in the interest of time, Section 55 is where the action is and where the medical community, I know, has some concerns.
Well, Representative Simon and Representative Corbucci will discuss those and we'll take the testimony. But as far as the Senate position is concerned, this isn't something we've heard before, and the department didn't bring this to us or discuss this with us as they did with your body. So this is the first time that within the last couple of days that we're hearing about this. So I certainly would want to have discussion with respect to all the language that's here before we make any decisions about how we feel about it.
Madam Chair, we are certainly prepared to have that discussion, and the result of this was beyond committee deadline. The ruling was the timing of it. There wasn't an opportunity to have a bill, if you will, but the Senate did support the genetic information and standards that Representative Kahn moved last year into law. And in the past, you know, that we have certain standards relative to people's rights relative to information that the government collects about them. And so while newborn screening is a subset of that, I believe that the House language that you will see is very supportive of the Minnesota Data Practices Act and what we believe should be the rights of individuals in Minnesota to have control over information that the government collects about them.
And so, Representative Holberg, is one of the issues of controversy that has to do with the section has to do with the issue of whether someone opts in or opts out?
And Madam Chair, you can just tell me when it's time, but we'd be happy to pass out an A6 amendment and talk through the language. And we have made many concessions to the Department of Health. The amendment does not use the term opt-in or opt-out. It uses the term...
Object. Object.
Object. And it gives parents some rights relative to the use of the blood samples and the test results if they choose to participate in the newborn screening process.
Well, Representative Kahn?
Let me make it completely clear that opt-in is totally off the table. We're not talking about that. I mean, some people might like that, but we're totally not talking about that. We're talking about what form the opt-out would take and what it would cover.
And, Madam Chair, in large part, what the language that we have before the committee today in the form of the A6 amendment reflects what the health department said they were willing to do 4 years ago relative to informing parents when they were given the authority to add additional tests to the newborn screening without having coming back to the legislature each year, which from my experience, they've fallen far short of their responsibilities in upholding their end of the bargain relative to that. And this language will help get us along that road as well.
Well, Representative Holberg, I think we'll go ahead and take some testimony, but when you say things like certain things are off the table now because of discussion and conversation you've had with the department to try to reach a resolution, and on the Senate side, we don't even know the issues, and we haven't heard any public testimony with respect to people who might have, we might have, been, have come to a different conclusion way back at the beginning of this process. I don't know, but that's the concern I have. And this seems like it's a pretty substantial issue, and we're trying to do some justice to it. We'll get a chance for people to testify here today, but this isn't something we've had a chance to consider, and normally something of this much substance we would have wanted to take testimony on in committee. So who's here in the audience? How many people do we have who have come here to testify on this issue? At least four? If you have the similar positions on this issue, do you think you could come to the table together just in the interest of trying to save time?
I think this is a good break.
Okay, at this point, I guess what we're going to do is we're going to have to break, recess to the call of the chair, and we're going to, if we get done with our caucus in time, we'll come back before 11. If not, we'll just have to stay... Keep you posted as much as we can.
Madam Chair, I've asked your staff. So we've drawn quite a crowd to see if they can find a different room that's much larger for us.
And if you can check with my legislative assistant, Pat Wallner, she will keep you posted in terms of the time when both the House and Senate members are available to meet again. And I appreciate your patience. I know this is not a great way to conduct a meeting, but... the end of session and the best we can do.
Madam Chair, I doubt it will be before 11. I just know things are going to be in the mix here, so I'm just cautioning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just suspect it will not be that way. So.
And Madam Chair, just for the record and for those assembled, the House is going into floor session at 9:30, and then I think recessing around 10, and it's anyone's guess as to when.
We may be meeting off and on through the day and possibly even late into the evening. So, again, I apologize, but thank you.
And, Madam Chair, if I might, can we pass the A6 amendment to the Senate members so they would have time to review it and have discussion with the...
Representative Holberg,
we'd
appreciate that. Thank you.
That's trying to deal with the newborn screening.
Recess.